Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
8:13 now, Tommy Tucker, WWL, aftermath of the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street, and it's so different. And I was watching Ronald Surpass, our next guest, Department of Criminal Justice, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent, our frequent guest and our friend on CNN yesterday. Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. And I was thinking, you know, we went to... We went to New York after 9/11, or those of us that have been there before, and you know, we recognize the buildings with the green roofs, and we try to identify what it was like with the 9/11 attacks. And I'm not putting this on the same scale as that, but it is different in that this is our city, and you can relate a lot more to it, and you understand a lot more of the lay of the land, what the normal habits are, what the routines are, et cetera, if that makes sense to you. However, you, as a former NOPD superintendent and a guy who is a nationally known expert, going back to the CNN appearance yesterday, you have some unique perspectives on this, I would think, huh, Chief?
Yeah, I think so, Tommy, and would love to answer any question you have that we might be able to make some sense of it.
Well, let's start with just your initial perceptions on this.
First thing that happens at a time of crisis like this, the police run to the danger. That's what the officers did. Very grateful, very proud of them in doing so. The instant second thing you do is render aid and life-saving behavior. And the third thing you do instantly is protect evidence, because evidence is what brings these cases to a conclusion where someone could be held accountable in a court of law. So that's what happens in the first seconds of these kinds of things. The next thing that happens is something called after-action reviews and hot washing. What could have been done differently? What wasn't planned for? What was not expected? What, over the history of New Orleans, had not been considered with newer thinking by people who want to really do evil things, right? There's one line of thinking that this guy, evil as he is, going to go to hell, obviously. If a vehicle would have stopped him, what would have been the difference if he'd have just jumped out with that automatic long rifle and started shooting people? It doesn't make it any less, doesn't make it any worse. It just means he was determined would probably be the outcome. The second thing is, there's a lot of talk about these bollards. When I was a young officer in 1980, walking the beat the first time on Bourbon Street, the police officers put the bollards out every day. They were on the sidewalk in a hole. There were four of them for each intersection, and you would put them in, and you'd leave them there all night, and you'd put them back. But they weren't at Bourbon and Canal.
Chief, let me just jump in.
Too wide.
Yeah, let me jump in for a second there. What are we talking about here? Something metal, something plastic? Sure. You say put them in, you'd have to be able to pick it up and carry it, but yet it would have to be strong enough to keep a car from plowing over it, right?
It would keep them from being successful and not slowing it down. They were heavy enough that they had some impact resistance, I'm sure. I'm not an engineer. Mm-hmm. But they weren't so heavy that an officer couldn't pick them up.
Okay.
But they were painted yellow. They were a very big deterrent. And over generations, I guess they just went away. and they stopped using them. I know when I came back in 2010, I inquired about the bollards, not the barricades that you see on the parade route, which you, you and I could pick that up.
Right. But you're talking about the metal ones, right? The metal ones that,
yeah. That have NOPD on them and that kind of thing that you see along, you know, the Endymion route.
Right.
The holes in Bourbon Street had been covered up with years of resurfacing of the streets, I was told. So that's a city issue. The city has to decide to do something like that. And there's probably a host of reasons why they did or did not put those bollards back in. Then there was a period of time where they were using, like, the roller blade, the roller train things that the police department said, according to the mayor yesterday, didn't work. Fair enough. The question is Bourbon Street is a pedestrian mall. It's a business community. It's a residential community. And there's always going to be this compromise that has to be determined. If the community and the city wants New Orleans to be a pedestrian, Bourbon Street to be a pedestrian mall, you could put cement barricades at every intersection and every cross street, and you would never have to be concerned about this as a vehicle. You'd still have other things. But has the city ever made that choice? And in the 45 years I've been here, the city has never made the choice that Bourbon Street would be a pedestrian mall only to be hard target with cement like that. These aren't anything other than thinking points, Tommy. A city has to make its choice of what it wants to do.
So I was talking to Glade Bilby earlier, and I'm trying to think, how would that work with delivery vehicles, with emergency vehicles?
Exactly.
Could you make that a pedestrian mall only?
I think it would be something that would have to be considered incredibly tightly because, you know, one of the reasons we have such a robust mounted unit is because the crowd on Bourbon Street is a big crowd. It is a fun crowd. It is what makes Bourbon Street Bourbon Street. But the reason we have so many mounted units is because the officers can work the crowd away from where someone who needs medical attention. They can work the crowd away from where the fire department needs to set up its equipment. So you're solving two problems at the same time. One, the unique nature of Bourbon Street being a pedestrian mall for the greatest music, food, and entertainment in the world. And you're making accommodations. So if you need to get a fire truck in there, those buildings are old. If one goes, many could go. If someone needs medical care, if you made it a pure pedestrian, you'd have to have those same entry and exit points for a vehicle as big as a fire truck. So how would you do that? I'm sure it can be done, right? I mean, we can do it. It's just what's going to be the will of the city to make those choices, and will this be something that causes the city to fundamentally think differently about Bourbon Street? Consider the 45 years on no Bourbon Street, this would be a dramatic reconsideration of how Bourbon Street should be configured, and that conversation likely should happen.
That's why I wanted to get your take on this. As an officer that walked the streets, put those bollards in, when it comes to putting them on the sidewalk, I guess you'd have to have them on the sidewalk or else, and this goes to what the governor said as well, as I try to think this through, well, if not here, then where? And the whole terrorist approach is based on weakest spot, weakest link at your weakest moment, right? So you can't make everything safe from everywhere. If you could go down any street in the quarter, you go down Royal, I don't know where there are other bollards, but you go down Royal, you go down Decatur, you could run down a bunch of people on the sidewalk if you could drive on the sidewalk. Is there any way to make it absolutely safe?
Jackson Square. We used to put bollards up at Jackson Square for the same reason, because charters, people not familiar with the traffic pattern, would want to go right across Jackson Square. Charters go on to the other side of the square, so we'd have to put up bollards there. I think the point you make, and look, people lost loved ones. Officers were shot. Shocks the conscience of the community. The deference and respect to that is important and crucial. But every place, unless you're in a sealed box, there's going to be vulnerabilities, and it's a risk-reward analysis. How much risk are we willing to take for the reward of what we want to do, whatever it may be? I don't know that you could ever make Bourbon Street, even if you put cement on every corner and every cross street, safe from someone who might have got jumped out of that truck with an AK-47 and went out and started shooting at people, as sad as it is. Look, last night in New York, they had 10 people shot and or killed outside of a club. A few months ago at the barroom over on Convention Center Boulevard, they had 10 people shot. The point is that we have to understand that the only thing you can make perfectly safe is a safe locked inside of a safe, locked inside of a safe. Mm-hmm. And then they can maybe just take the safes. This is a horrible, horrible thing, but the city has had 45 years of my lifetime experience of Bourbon Street being a pedestrian mall that undulates between daytime commercial traffic, nighttime pedestrian mall. it might be time to rethink it. I don't know if it is, but that's what would be next if it was going to be.
And then I'm not trying to give anybody ideas or anything else, but there are a lot of situations where a lot of people are gathered along the streets and there are no barricades or anything else protecting anybody from anything where the other side of the street is open. So do you close both sides of the street? Can you do that? I don't think you can. That's why.
Well, so many things to consider. Well, Tommy, and think of the architecture, Tommy. Just think about the architecture real quick. Between Canal and Bourbon, those two huge buildings are set back a little bit off the sidewalk. Once you hit Iberville and Bourbon, and you're walking into the French Quarter, think about how many times you've gone down there. What do you see? A very narrow street that maybe two cars could be on, very narrow sidewalks, and about every other building has posts holding up balconies. The place where Bourbon Street is wide enough, potentially, to have more than one vehicle or to go around a vehicle is in that 100 block. Once you get into the 200 block and you get further down, you end up where there's naturally occurring impediments to vehicle flow, only two lanes. Sidewalks are very small, and most of those sidewalks have posts that are holding up balconies, or much of the sidewalk has posts holding up balconies. It could cause tremendous damage, of course, but it's not like driving down the freeway, is my point.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Ronald Serpas about the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street yesterday, 823. Traffic now, WWL. All right, 826 and a half, Tommy Tucker. WWL back talking to Ronald Serpas, former NOPD superintendent, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, about the terrorist attack on Bourbon Street yesterday. Chief, you know, as we talk about this, I think about being on Bourbon Street and across streets and so forth. I don't know how you make anything absolutely safe because the police have to stop traffic on Iberville and Bienville for people that are crossing Bourbon Street, even though it is a pedestrian mall, right?
The corner is at, every corner on Dauphine and every corner on Royal Street, you have cross traffic. And then you also have to consider that the police department is operating, with somewhere less than 900 people. No matter how many people you have on one night, you have Bourbon Street every night. So there's a lot of different moving parts here, but the last 7 or 8 years of the city being unable to, and give COVID what COVID was due, but to have a department that is staffed this low, considering the dramatic demands of the Sugar Bowl, the Mardi Gras, and New Year's Eve, that has nothing to do, let's say, with what happened two nights ago, but it has everything to do with the way people feel about the quarter when they walk in it during these major events.
The governor was asked yesterday by a reporter, how do we know the Superdome is going to be safe for the Sugar Bowl today? And he said he was going to be there, which I think the better answer probably would have been about the security of one closed facility as opposed to and a ticketed event as opposed to just being out in the public. Thoughts on that about the security at the Dome today and the differences between providing security and enhancing security or protecting people at a ticketed event in a stadium as opposed to out on the street?
Yeah, I think there's two ways of looking at it. I can't speak for the governor, but one of the things that terrorism seeks to do is deny you your confidence in your government's ability to make you safe, deny your opportunity to engage socially and economically. That's what I think part of that conversation might have been. The other one is the Dome is different. The Dome doesn't move. It's a big building. It sits still. I was the chief of police when we did the Super Bowl in 2013, the chief of operations when we did the Super Bowl in 97. And there are very similar hard targeting techniques you can do around a building that doesn't move. You remember from 2013, big cement barricades to stop vehicles from getting certain places. Your point about ticketed is important because that means the only people getting in ideally are those who have been ticketed. Mm-hmm. And then there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure security around any and all possible points of entry that are not going to change as the day changes. There's doors that are going to be doors forever, and you block those doors. It's a completely different security package for a building than it is for a pedestrian mall.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again soon. Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, our head of Washington State Police, Nashville City Police. Our friend got a unique perspective on this that we wanted to have. When we come back, we'll talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member. He's got some ideas and reactions to the terror attack on Bourbon Street. And then we'll talk to House Majority Leader Steve Scalise about his thoughts and the government and response and everything else. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us. Time now, WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen.